In St. Matthew 6-3, we read, "But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth," and in Psalm 31-5, "Into thine hand I commit my spirit, thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God of truth." And again in Psalm 31:15, "My times are in thy hand, deliver me from the hand of mine enemies, and from them that persecute me." For a more complete footprint interpretation, we will have to study the symbolism and meaning of numbers as well as symbolic anatomy. Also, more research will have to be conducted along the lines of the world's most ancient symbolism. For instance, the emblematic hand of the mysteries was a carved hand covered with numerous symbols, and this was extended to the neophytes when they entered into the Temple of Wisdom. An understanding of the symbols embossed upon the surface of the hand brought with it divine power and regeneration. Therefore, by means of these symbolic hands, the candidate was said to be raised from the dead. The hand of the mysteries is also known as the hand of the philosopher. When the disciple of the great art first beholds this hand, it is closed, and he must discover a method of opening it before the mystery contained therein may be revealed. In alchemy, the hand signifies the formula for the preparation of the tincture physicorum. The four fingers represent four divine agents through the combined operations of which the great work is accomplished. The wise take their oath by the hand that they will not teach the art without parables. To the Kabbalist, the hand signifies the operation of the one power, the crowned thumb, in the four worlds, the fingers with their emblems. Besides its alchemical and Kabbalistic meanings, the hand symbolizes the hand of a master mason with which he raises the martyred builder of a divine house. The crown thumb is absolute light, unknown and unrevealed, whose power shines through all the lesser lights that are but sparks of this eternal effulgence. The Creator's works are all contained within the hollow of his hand. A man's physical body has five distinct and important extremities, two legs, two arms, and a head, of which the last governs the first four. The number five has been accepted as the symbol of man. By its four corners, the pyramid symbolizes the arms and legs, and by its apex the head, thus indicating that one rational power controls four irrational corners. The hands and feet are used to represent the four elements, of which the two feet are earth and water, and the two hands fire and air. The brain then symbolizes the sacred fifth element, ether, which controls and unites the other four. It is easy to see why the space intelligences have used the symbol of a hand with its corresponding number five. I am certain that the readers of this book will have much more to offer toward a more complete understanding of the tracks on the desert. Mr. George H. Lark, Librarian of the Philosophical Research Society, Incorporated in Los Angeles, California, sent drawings of the right and left footprints to Florence Sternfels, a psychic of New Jersey. She has worked with Dr. Ryan at Duke University on different phenomena in the parapsychology field. Mr. Lark did not mention sources, etc. when writing to her, and he did not explain the drawings in any way. After meditating on the footprints, she wrote, "It seems the owner of the feet is very odd, and it could be a woman because of the long hair. This person seems to be in another world or on another planet and talks in a strange language and has an unusual sounding voice. This person also dresses very strangely. Whatever the mystery is, everyone will know in a short time. People like the one the footprints belong to certainly appear to come from another planet." This is very interesting information, considering the fact that this woman had no knowledge of what these prints were or from where they might have come. Of our space friend who placed his tracks in desert sand, we might say, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings glad tidings." The Lemurian interpretation of the tracks on the desert is given here by itself, since placing it with the preceding material would have only confused both interpretations. The left footprint stands for the old continent of Mu. Mu, empire of the sun, motherland of their human race on the planet Earth, lies beneath the waters. She is also called Cuipan, or Lemuria. See Plate 4. A closed lotus means Mu no longer exists. The fish represents sunken Mu and is, as mentioned before, the symbol of the Piscean Age. Mu will remain submerged until all influences of the Piscean age are removed, for she will emerge from Pisces to Aquarius. 1. Mu lies beneath waves. 2. The invisible trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost pervades all, even the waters. The empire of the sun shines no more, for she has set. Since a triangle represents heaven, we see that inhabitants of Mu are in their heavens. 3. The closed eye, Mu sleeps. The third eye, or the spiritual eye of the Piscean, is closed. This also represents a cosmic egg. 4. Arabic numeral, 1, meaning the infinite one, the creator. Since this symbol forms the fish, it means Mu is swallowed. You all life returns to the one. 5. Mu lies in an abyss at a great depth. 146 B. The lotus flower, the floral symbol of Mu. The lotus was the first flower to appear on earth. 1. A water jug, A, with or, B, without the top portion of the lotus. The water jug is the Aquarian age. The new continent of Mu will emerge from the water during the Aquarian age on earth. 2. This symbol represents colonists who went out from Mu, the motherland. The left line represents those who went west, and the right line represents those who went east. 3. The three bars represent Mu because she emerged originally in three stages. The rectangle is a hieratic symbol for Mu. 4. Mu is submerged, upside down. 5. Lemuria, or Mu, was divided into three parts and water separated the land. 6. She was a tableland. 7. The T represents Tau, resurrection or immersion, also the crux or southern cross in the heavens. Mu will be resurrected, the new heavens, new earth, new age will emerge, in the region of the southern cross. The right footprint stands for the new continent of Mu. The new heavens and the new earth, the new golden dawn or age, the Aquarian or air age, the new Mu will emerge from the Pacific Ocean. See Palaitvai. See the four great primary forces of infinite spirit are continually active in the universe. 1. The four forces are revolving in vortices, the central sun or creator, the initiator. 2. These could possibly be the symbols of the different activity of each force. The four great primary forces are static magnetic field, electrostatic field, electromagnetic wave, resonating electromagnetic field. 3. Life takes form through the activity of the four forces. The face tells us that the human form is a universal form. Because we are made in the image of God, whose countenance is as the sun, full of beauty and too pure behold iniquity, we too should reflect that loveliness with a smiling face, and this face is smiling. Remember in the Sources Speak, where we mentioned the experiment of Dr. David Todd in 1924. Contact was attempted in Washington with the planet Mars. Several of the messages received took the form of a crudely drawn human face. D. The new, resurrected continent of Mu, brought up through cataclysmic changes in the Pacific. 1. All comes from the great totality, the One. All in the new age will be according to their divine will. This large dot appears as the first symbol above the heel on the right footprint and was not interpreted in the previous section. 2. Lemurian colonists, reincarnated, will return from east and west and merge into a new race. This will take place through the coming of positive, male, and negative, female, lines of force. 3. A. The One Spirit, B. Symbol of the Sun, the male principle of the One, C. Symbol of the Moon, the female principle of the One. Therefore, from the One androgynous spirit springs male and female. 4. The cosmic egg, having been resurrected from the water, brings forth new life. This could also be a sperm and would mean the same thing. This symbol as a black oval was seen on the side of the large mother ship that appeared on the desert, November 20, 1952. However, it was on its side thus. 5. Life takes place through the action of the four great primary forces within the One. 6. The seven planets of ancient wisdom will again be at the heart of the new race, and they will be guided by the planetary forces. 7. This is a symbol of immersion of New Mu. She will emerge as a unit, the three lands will be one. 158. Here is another symbol of the four forces radiating from the one, infinite spirit shown by the thumb. All forces will be understood and utilized for good in the new age. The hand is the hand of God and will rule supreme. The hand is a universal form just as the face is. 9. Through purity of living, purity of thought, meditating on the one, the central sun, and through prayer the spiritual third eye will be pierced and opened in the new race. All will experience telepathy, clairvoyance, etc. The activating force will be the fourth primary force or the resonating electromagnetic field, RMF. The symbol of an arrow means the force is active. There is a connection here with sound and may be the means of rediscovering the lost sacred word. 10. These are geometric patterns. God geometrizes, for everything has mathematical pattern. 11. This is a musical note, symbol of the music of the spheres. This sound, or vibration, in the fourth dimension of motion, together with geometric patterns in the fifth dimension of motionlessness, is the cosmic glue which holds the universe together. In Job 13:27, we read, "Thou sittest a print upon the heels of my feet. And it has been truly written, there shall be signs in the heavens above, and signs in the earth beneath." The tracks on the desert fulfill ancient prophecy, brought to us by other tongues. Chapter 3, Molduk and Melona. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, O day star, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation, in the sides of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee, and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness, and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, everyone in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial because thou hast destroyed thy land, and slain thy people, the seed of evil, doers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name, and remnant, and son, and nephew, saith the Lord. Isaiah 14:12-22. The word Lucifer comes from a Latin word meaning, light, bringing, a name sometimes given by poets to the moon, or to the planet Venus when it appears as the morning star and to the day. In ancient times, this word was wrongly interpreted to mean Satan. The Hebrew meaning of the word seems to be brilliant, splendid, illustrious, or as in the Septuagint, Vulgate, the rabbinical commentators, Luther, and others, brilliant star. And in this sense was the proper name among the Hebrews of the morning star. Tertullian and Gregory the Great understood this passage of Isaiah in reference to the fall of Satan, in consequence of which the name Lucifer has since been applied to Satan, and this is now the usual acceptation of the word. Dr. Henderson in his Isaiah renders the line, How art thou fallen from heaven, O illustrious son of the morning? Dr. Henderson says, The application of this passage to Satan, and to the fall of the apostate angels, is one of those gross perversions of sacred writ which so extensively obtain, and which are to be traced to a proneness to seek for more in any given passage than it really contains. The only place in the Holy Bible where the word Lucifer is found is in Isaiah. The early church fathers were under the impression that the passage could only refer to Satan, the prince of darkness. However, Satan in the Bible has no connection with the Lucifer of Isaiah. Isaiah was figuratively speaking of the king of Babylon in reference to his glory and pomp, but he was actually referring to the destruction of the planet known to the ancient world as the Shining One. Lucifer and its remains are now to be observed in the telescope as the asteroid belt. By a curious chain of reference, the passage in Luke 10:18 once was thought to refer to Isaiah 14:12, but this passage says, "I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven." Even though this passage speaks of Satan, Lucifer became the chief of the fallen angels, the name borne by Satan before his rebellion. However, it must be stated again that Satan is in no way connected with Lucifer. In the sources speak, Zoe said, "Your so-called hydrogen bomb could make an asteroid belt out of you. This happened many years ago to the planet of what you would call the fifth orbit. We knew what they were doing, but we didn't interfere. We cannot stand by and see another waste." After their destruction, there were terrible disasters on Massar, Mars. Great volcanic eruptions took place. Many of our people perished. We would have been thrown out of this solar system and lost if we had not quickly constructed two artificial satellites. Some of you scientists have noticed that our so-called moons Phobos and Deimos reflect too much light to be made of earthy substance. They are right. They are metallic in nature. They readjusted our unstable condition and saved a planet. It is true that the ancient poets knew of the satellites of Mars before their discovery, and ancient astrological works mention them. Jonathan Swift in Gulliver's Travels, 1726, wrote that Mars had two satellites, and his complete description of them was most accurate. They were actually discovered as late as 1877 by Asaph Hall of the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. How did Swift and all these other individuals know that Mars had two moons? If the prophet Isaiah was actually referring to a fallen star or a destroyed planet, let us see if his description as found in the 14th chapter fits such a happening. To begin with, he wonders how Lucifer, then a morning star, fell from heaven. A morning star now can be Jupiter, Mars, Saturn or Venus when rising shortly before the sun, and forming a conspicuous object in the sky just before dawn, hence, figuratively, a forerunner, or one who announces and guides. For a planet to be called the morning star, it must be west of the sun and visible before sunrise. When bright planets are east of the sun and therefore visible in the early evening, they are called evening stars. The ancients, not realizing they were the same stars in different roles, called Venus when the evening star, Hesperus or Vesper, and when it was the morning star, Phosphorus. Mercury was called Mercury when it was the evening star, but it was called Apollo when it was a morning star. When we think of morning star now, we immediately associate it with the planet Venus. Therefore, we think the ancient word Lucifer also applied to Venus. However, this is not the case. Venus and Mercury were known primarily as evening stars, but when Venus was a morning star, it was called Phosphorus. This word comes from the Greek, phos, light, and phero, bear. The asteroid belt, then the planet Lucifer, was also known as the morning star. Did the destruction of Lucifer take place in Isaiah's time? This is not likely, for history tells us that there were great catastrophes on Earth as early as the 13th century BC, and remember, space intelligences refer to our Earth as Saros, Saros, the sorrowful planet, or the planet of much cataclysm. The Old Testament is literally full of references to the end of the planet known to the ancients of Earth as Lucifer, and to outer space intelligences as Moltke, the silver-tongued. The first three letters of the planet's name, Mal, mean, tongue. For a moment, let us refer once again to James 3:5-10. There is a double meaning to be found here, for James is not only talking about the literal tongue of man, but he is speaking metaphorically of Moltke, Lucifer. James 3:5, "Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. In reference to Moldk, this could be translated, even so the planet Moldk, tongue, is a little world, member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a destruction, matter, a little explosion, fire, causes, kindleth. James 3:6, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity, so is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. This verse can also be translated, and the tongue is a fire, that world of iniquity. The tongue is among our members that which defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the wheel of nature, or birth, and is set on fire by hell, Jaina. Referring again to Moldk, James 3:6 could read, and Moldk, the tongue, is a flame, a fire, that wood of iniquity. Moldk, the tongue, is among our planet's members, that which defileth the whole solar system, body, and setteth on fire the vortex, wheel, of nature, or birth, and is set on fire by the unseen state, hell. In Greek, hell is here translated as Jaina, Hebrew, Gehinnom. Gehinnom was the valley of Hinnom, near Jerusalem, where the city's refuse was thrown and burned, hence, hell, fire and hell. 158 itself, the place of future torment of the wicked. The last part of James 3:6 can also be translated, and it is set on fire of hell. In referring to Moldk, this would give us, and Moldk, it, is set on fire of the unseen state, hell. This means that Moldk was a world of iniquity that exploded and burned and was a planet in our solar system that defiled all the other planets because of its evil, and Moldk, the tongue, set on fire its vortex, the power of its birth and being, and therefore was set on fire of the unseen state, because Moldk released the terrible hydrogen power she broke her vortex and was thereby reduced to an unseen state. James 3:7, for every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea, is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. Nature of man. We see here that man in this solar system had tamed everything, for all things of nature were under his control. James 3:8, but the tongue can no man tame, it is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Man could not tame Moldk, the tongue, for it was an undisciplined child of the solar system. It wished to have power over all other planets and desired the authority of the Creator himself. Moldk was therefore full of deadly poison. James 3:9, therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Moldk, the tongue, praised the Father, but cursed all men who are in the likeness of God. James 3:10, out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Moldk blessed and cursed at the same time, but this is not living true universal law of the infinite Father. These things should not exist side by side. I mentioned before, that the Old Testament has many references to the destruction of Lucifer or Moldk. Moldk, as a world, came to an abrupt end during the Exodus from Egypt in the days of Moses, 13th century before Christ. The Exodus took place amid a great natural upheaval that terminated the period of Egyptian history known as the Middle Kingdom. Contemporary Egyptian documents describe the same disaster accompanied by the plagues of Egypt. One of the first visible signs on earth of the destruction of Moldk was the reddening of the earth's surface by a fine dust of rusty pigment. Ipua, an Egyptian eyewitness of their catastrophe, wrote his description on papyrus, the river is blood. Plague is throughout the land. Blood is everywhere. The papyrus Ipua corresponds very well with the book of Exodus 7:20, all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. And in Exodus 7:21, there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. The presence of the red dust in the rivers caused the fish to die and there was decomposition and foul odor. Exodus 7:21, and the river stank. Exodus 7:24, and all the Egyptians did round about the river for water to drink, for they could not drink of the water of the river. The papyrus Ipua says, men shrink from tasting, human beings thirst after water. That is our water. That is our happiness. What shall we do in respect thereof? All is ruin. Men had boils and sickness, cattle died from the irritating red dust. Exodus 93, behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thy cattle which is in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses, upon the camels, upon the oxen, and upon the sheep. There shall be a very grievous murrain, pestilence or plague. After the coming of the red dust, another strange phenomenon took place. Exodus 9-8, and the Lord said unto Moses and unto Aaron, take to you handfuls of ashes of the furnace, and let Moses sprinkle it toward the heaven in the sight of Pharaoh. Exodus 9-9, and it shall become small dust in all the land of Egypt, and shall be a boil breaking forth with blains upon man, and upon beast, throughout all the land of Egypt. This small dust, like ashes of the furnace, sounds identically the same as the radioactive ash that fell on men and animals in the Pacific Ocean after atomic tests there recently. Even some of the fish were contaminated. It is possible that this small dust or ash was the radioactive material sent out after the explosion of Moltke entered the Earth's atmosphere before the next happening, the shower of meteorites that struck Earth. Exodus 9:18, behold, tomorrow about this time I will cause it to rain a very grievous hail, such as hath not been in Egypt since the foundation thereof even until now. Stones of Barad are translated here as hail. However, Barad is the term for meteorites. Midrashic sources and the Babylonian Talmud tell us that the stones which fell on Egypt were hot. Therefore, the hail could not have been ice, for this description fits only meteorites. The ancient Egyptian word for hail was ar, and means a driving shower of sand and stones. Also, in the book of Joshua it is said that great stones fell from the sky, and they are called stones of Barad. Exodus 9:24, so there was hail, and fire mingled with the hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Exodus 9:25, and the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail smote every herb of the field, and brake every tree of the field. Exodus 9:28, entreat the Lord, for it is enough that there be no mighty thunderings, voices of God, and hail, and I will let you go, and ye shall stay no longer. The fall of meteorites is accompanied by explosion, like noises, and in this case the crashes were mighty. The papyrus Ipua says, trees are destroyed. No fruits, no herbs are found, grain has perished on every side, that has perished which yesterday was seen. The land is left to its weariness like the cutting of flax. In the Visuddhi Magga, a Buddhist text on world cycles, we find, when a world cycle is destroyed by wind, there arises in the beginning a cycle, destroying great cloud. There arises a wind to destroy the world cycle, and first it raises a fine dust, and then coarse dust, and then fine sand, and then coarse sand, and then grit, stones, up to boulders as large as mighty trees on the hilltop. So, Moltke came to an end with the coming of the red dust in the time of Moses and the exodus from Egypt. As time went on, the earth was engulfed in more dense matter from the fallen planet. Exodus 10:22-23, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days, they saw not one another, neither rose any from his place for 3 days. Moltke caused terrible destruction on earth, and darkness was over the entire world. Mars was also greatly damaged by this catastrophe, and that will be taken up later on. The papyrus Ipua speaks of a great earthquake. The towns are destroyed. Upper Egypt has become waste. All is ruin. The residence is overturned in a minute. Exodus 12:30, and Pharaoh rose up in the night, he, and all his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was not a house where there was not one dead. It should be stated here that the word Marduk may have come from Moltke. Marduk was the chief god of the Babylonian pantheon, from his mouth issued flame. In the battle of Marduk with Tiamat, He, Marduk, created the evil wind, and the tempest, and the hurricane, and the fourfold wind, and the sevenfold wind, and the whirlwind, and the wind which had no equal. This description fits. Marduk created chaos with hydrogen devices or the evil wind. Marduk, therefore, created the wind which had no equal.